America is an amazing country filled with wonderful people who do incredible things. But too often, the media and liberal politicians ignore big parts of our nation and the people who make it work. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Josh Helton, the RNC's Senior Advisor for Election Integrity. The RNC has created the first ever Election Integrity Division, and Josh and I are going to talk about what Democrats are doing to undermine safe elections and what Republicans are doing to fight back, and why it is so important that Americans can cast their vote with confidence. This is what Republicans stand for. I'm Ronna McDaniel, and this is Real America. Welcome to Real America. I'm so excited to have you join us on this very special podcast devoted to election integrity. I get asked about election integrity everywhere I go. People want to know, is my vote going to be safe? Is it going to be counted? Do I feel comfortable voting by mail? And I really wanted to spend time talking to you about the Election Integrity Division that has been created by the RNC and the many, many lawsuits we are in right now, 78 actually, to protect the elections. But I want to start with one thing. First, I get asked all the time, why are we talking about this now? Why hasn't the RNC done this in the past? Well, we were under this obscure consent decree. Most people never have heard of it. I hadn't heard of it till I became RNC chair, where in the 1980s, a judge prohibited the RNC from doing any type of election operations. We couldn't recruit poll workers or poll watchers, and we couldn't engage in that space at all. And that only expired after the 2020 election. So the 2022 election was the first time where we were ever really able to engage in this election integrity space, which is so critical. So that election, we had 70 lawsuits. We recruited 80,000 poll watchers and poll workers. And we did, I think, a great job helping to protect the election and doing what voters need us to do to secure their ballot and their vote. Now, we've gone even further. And we've created an entire department within the RNC completely dedicated to protecting the vote. And it's so many aspects. Recruiting, like I said, people to watch and observe the election, people to actually work the polls, count the ballots, do all those things, volunteer lawyers that we're going to shift at polling locations across the country and build a war room. All these things are what we're doing to protect the 2024 election. And I want you to hear about it. This podcast won't even begin to cover all the work we're doing, but we're going to try. So this is a little glimpse of it. And joining me today is going to be Josh Helton. He is the RNC's Senior Advisor on Election Integrity. He is running this new department. He's a lawyer. He is a veteran in the election integrity space. And I think you're going to really enjoy hearing this conversation about how we're going to protect your vote in 2024.
Republicans need to vote early to win in 2024. That's why the RNC's Bank Your Vote campaign is educating GOP voters on how to lock in their votes as early as possible. And now we have customized websites for all 50 states and in 16 languages. Help Republicans win big in November. Visit bankyourvote.com to find out how to vote early in your state.
Welcome back to Real America. I am so excited to introduce you to our next guest, somebody who has been a key fixture at the RNC, doing so much incredible work and has taken over our election integrity operation. This is the first time we've ever had a whole department devoted to election integrity. It's so critical for our elections going forward. Josh Helton, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chairwoman. I appreciate you having me on.
I'm excited to have you. I'm guessing a lot of people don't know you. You're kind of behind the scenes. You told me earlier this is your first podcast.
It is.
Are you nervous?
I'm very nervous. Okay, no, it's not too bad. I couldn't have a better host, so that's making me feel a lot
better. That's good. Well, no need to be nervous, but can you give just a little intro of you, your background, so that our listeners and viewers can get to know you better?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a practicing attorney. I've been practicing law for about 20 years now. And starting in 2015, I was the general counsel for Mike Huckabee's presidential campaign. And after Governor Huckabee got out of the race, then I transitioned over to the NRSC. And that's really where I started focusing my practice on what we used to call election day operations.
Exactly.
Now election integrity. So did that for the NRSC in 2016 and then 2018. Then in 2020, I put together the EDO program or election integrity program for Senator Cornyn and the Republican Party of Texas, and also Senator McSally, as well as working as an election litigation liaison for the Trump campaign.
Exactly.
Then 2021, and this is really how we got to know each other.
I got to know
a bunch of folks in the building. Governor Youngkin, now Governor Youngkin, asked me to run his election integrity program after the primary. So that's really where I had an opportunity to work with the RNC in earnest and for us to help build, you know, the Virginia plan and the model that we would eventually scale in 2022 and then double down on in 2024.
So I think election integrity encompasses a lot of things. So it's having poll watchers, it's recruiting poll workers, it's having lawyers on the ground. Talk about this division, your department, its singular focus, and what it's doing. And it started last cycle. I mean, it started at the beginning of this last cycle in 2023, because your work, you can't just pop up a month before the election.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I do want to give you credit for having the vision to make election integrity. It's a permanent full-time department. It's definitely been an evolving role for the RNC because of the consent decree,
correct,
obviously,
yep,
which I'm sure a lot of the folks listening are familiar with. But if you're not, for 40 years, the RNC wasn't able to participate in election integrity activities. So then once that ban was finally lifted, the RNC started putting together these programs and did a great job. I was at the NRSC again in 2022 and did a great job of collaborating with the RNC. And then for your vision to have its own standalone permanent department inside the RNC has just been a real game changer. It gives the department sort of the attention, the resources, and the bandwidth that it needs to develop.
Yeah, it does.
A truly
and
national
the first time
program.
We really could do it was 2022.
That's right.
So tell us about the department. What does it entail? Who do you have and what's your focus in the department?
So I'm the senior advisor for election integrity. We have a department director as well. She has a deputy. We've got a full-time comm staffer. We have three dedicated election integrity attorneys where all they do is election integrity from, you know, dusk till dawn. In the past, one of the issues, and this is why it was so great to have the full-time department, in the past, the RNC counsel's office attorneys, they have other RNC business they have to attend
exactly.
to, besides, especially in a convention year. But having these dedicated attorneys that all they do is election integrity has been a huge game changer. It creates a lot more capacity and has really allowed us to engage on a number of issues at the same time. We have a full-time comms staffer who is doing a phenomenal job of getting the word out about all of the good stuff that the department and the RNC are doing. And that's the HQ department here in D.C.
And then we have staff in 12 different states, so councils in 12 different states, which is critical. Why is it so important to have legal counsel on the ground in states early? Because as these laws are being formed, I mean, you can explain it. Why have them on the ground last year or in 2023 versus just putting them in the election year?
Yeah, absolutely. Having the boots on the ground is absolutely critical. It is an enormously important investment. And I will say, as an attorney who was doing EDO or election integrity while the RNC was under the consent decree, it tended to be very lawyer heavy. And it was a lot of conference calls and discussions with election administrators and putting together different documents that detailed how the voting was to occur. And what wasn't there and is there now are the boots on the ground and the field operation. And it is a huge difference because I've always said, you know, you can have a bunch of lawyers sitting in a you know, election headquarters or a war room. But if there's not poll watchers out there to tell them what's going on, it's not going to make a big difference. You're going to have to depend on a lot of other people to try to get your intelligence about what's happening. And that's not the most robust or efficient system. So to that point, we have election integrity directors in all of those states. In most of those states, they also have deputies who help them out. And we are in the process of identifying regional election integrity directors who will have more of a hyper-local approach and really get ingratiated into their region of the state so that they can do the thing that all of those folks are doing, which is focused on recruiting, training, and shifting poll workers and poll watchers. And so in order to work with all of our stakeholders and collaborate in that effort, we've got to have people in the state who know the politics of the state, who know the organizations of the state, who collaborate and are cooperative with our grassroots organizations, so we can get everybody plugged into this one big system that ends up, again, being a national election integrity program.
Yeah, because we know there's no longer an election day. There's an election month. And then you think, too, about how are we going to ensure for voters that we're paying attention and monitoring a process? Because I think it's the number one question I get on the road. How are you going to secure the election? I'm worried about what's going to happen. So just for our viewers' sake, a poll watcher is somebody who's going to observe, right? You're in a polling location. You have to be credentialed. You have to be trained. Mm-hmm. It is a different law for every state. A poll worker is someone who's going to be counting the ballots, right? Who's going to be somebody who's actually working the polls. And mm-hmm. people don't even understand. In some states like Wisconsin, we had to recruit them last year and submit their names last November. Same with North Carolina. Last June. This has never been done before by the party.
And in both of those states, to your point, we hit historic numbers. We hit historic recruiting numbers.
But think about how much better you feel as a voter knowing that you're going to have somebody there watching the process. And then also people in there working the polls who are counting the ballots, calibrating the machines there as the absentee ballots are coming in. And then on top of that, you layer lawyers and a war room and a reporting machine, reporting tool mm-hmm. that can quickly flag issues that we can deal with in real time. I mean, that's what it is, right?
That's exactly what it is. And that's the operational side of it that is so critically important. I love to tell this story as a representation of why it matters so much. And it comes from Youngkin in 2021. And everybody will remember that we were still in the throes of the COVID pandemic, and there was a lot of issues around masking, especially in Virginia.
Yes, there were.
There was a statewide executive order that said if you were in a school, you had to have on a mask. Now, a lot of the schools were also voting locations on Election Day.
Yeah.
So because we had our early warning detection system in place with our poll watchers and our attorneys, both paid and volunteer, we started getting around mid-morning, we started getting reports from all over the state that voters in general were being turned away for not masking in voting locations that
were also schools. Yep.
Exactly right. And so we immediately called the director of elections in Virginia and said, hey, we're getting reports about this from all over the state. And he said, well, no, it's actually just in Fairfax and we'll take care of it. We said, no, it's not. It's happening in 21 counties that we've documented. We'll send you that information and you can take a look at it. So we did. 30 minutes later, he had a press conference that had already been called, and he said no voter can be turned away for not masking,
exactly.
for not wearing a mask on a school. And then he also sent out a communication to all the registrars in Virginia. So it's a real-time example of how seeing something happen, seeing a problem manifest itself, reporting it through the legal structure, figuring out what that is, communicating with the election administrator, and receiving real-time resolution on Election Day.
And that's the operational side. And
I think it's
really critical for people to understand you can't really fix an election after the fact. Once the ballot is removed from the envelope, there's no identifying marker. You don't know who cast that ballot. It's really hard to put pieces of the puzzle back together after elections. So if you're going to find problems, it has to be on the front end. And that's what we're investing in. Now I want to talk about lawfare. We saw in 2020 Democrats flee to the courts and really win in a lot of cases, saying we can't have person-to-person contact for a person who needs to vote. They shouldn't have to show voter ID. So they pretty much eradicated many of these common sense tools that help us secure our elections. And they did that in 2020 through the courts because of the pandemic. And what we've seen since then is Democrats actively trying to codify those post-COVID laws. And we are trying to codify or continue to support those pre-COVID regulations like voter ID and a smaller voting window and no ballot harvesting in the courts. And that takes me to lawfare. How many lawsuits currently today, as we are sitting here, is the RNC engaged in?
We're currently in 78 lawsuits in 23 states.
78 lawsuits, mm-hmm. okay? And we're not going up against the DNC in most of these, right? Most of it's outside.
Not in most of them.
Most of it's outside Democrat groups that are doing this. The RNC is uniquely suited because we can get standing to do this. This is so critical. When people say, what did the RNC spend money on in 2023? I'm going to say, go look at the 77 lawsuits that are shaping the landscape for the 2024 election. It would be malpractice if we were not doing the work that your department's doing. Can you give me just some highlights, top level highlights of a few of the cases we're in, just so people can understand what's happening in the courts?
Yeah, I've got a ton of highlights. The hard part's going to be sort of narrowing it down.
I know, and you're a lawyer. So I know you charge by time, but we're going to.
We do tend to get long-winded, but there are some ones. And what I want to do when we talk about these a little bit is I want to give the folks that are listening and watching a flavor of the kind of lawsuits we're in, but they really are emblematic of the issues that we're focused
on. Exactly.
We're in those lawsuits because those are issues that we care about. And to start off with one that was just recently filed on February the 7th, it has to do with the Arizona Election Procedures Manual, and it's RNC versus Fontes. The Procedures Manual is something that they've been using for a long time. The current Secretary of State, Adrian Fontes, is using the EPM to try to change Arizona election law. And this is an administrative manual, and it has the effect of law, but it has to be congruent with the law. So he released an EPM that also the Democrat governor and the Democrat AG signed off on. They all signed off on it. They released it at the very end of the year to limit the amount of comment time, and then also published it on a Friday so they could bury it in the weekend news cycle.
We
were very prepared for it. And had already sent comment letters about some of the issues that we saw with what was proposed. We went through what was actually filed, and then immediately filed a lawsuit on that. And there are eight aspects of this EPM that we're challenging. And I'm not going to get into super fine detail on all of them, but some of them are really important. They talk about the issues, non-citizen voting. For one thing, that's an important issue.
This is huge. Democrats are trying to get this everywhere, non-citizen voting.
They are. And it's an important issue around the country. And it's particularly an important issue in Arizona,
right,
where they also have issues with illegal immigration.
Correct.
So in the EPM, they have tried to improperly allow individuals who are on jury duty admit to being a non-citizen and then let them remain registered. They are also improperly allowing federal-only voters to vote in person and by mail without providing documentary proof of citizenship. They are improperly trying to eliminate the requirement for county recorders to use state and federal databases to locate and remove non-citizens. I mean, you can detect a theme here, right?
Right.
Fontes and the Democrat machine in Arizona is trying to liberalize all of these protections that are meant to make sure that only United States citizens vote in Arizona, which I would think is something that we could all agree on. The latest polling I've seen on non-citizen voting hovers around 88% to 90% of Americans believe that only citizens should vote.
And they don't have the authority to do that.
They don't have
that. That is not their law. They don't have the authority to do that. So that's why we sued, right?
That's right.
But
that's
people aren't, if you're not paying attention, if you're not on the ground, you're not going to see this stuff. Give us another highlight of a good lawsuit we're in.
So three really good lawsuits that we're in. And this is something you talked about, us having standing, how critical that is for the RNC, the NRSC, and the NRCC. It comes into play when we intervene in these lawsuits to make sure that these election integrity and voter protection laws that states have passed are defended as to the fullest extent that they can be defended. We did that in Florida. We did that in Georgia. And we've done it in Texas. Georgia and Texas are against the Biden DOJ.
I just want people to think about that for a minute. The Biden Department of Justice sued states for creating their own election law, which they are constitutionally granted the right to do. That's how upset they are about laws that require voter ID that were actually going against the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, and of course, I mean, you'll just remember, just for more context, I mean, the passage of SB 202 in Georgia was why Major League Baseball pulled the All-Star game.
The All-Star game got moved
because
of that, because Joe Biden went in and said, voter ID is Jim Crow 2.0, which was a lie. So tried to stir racial tensions. Mm-hmm. He took away revenue from a predominantly black city in Atlanta, moved the All-Star game. They moved the All-Star game to Colorado with and it was $100 million in revenue to those companies that had lost so much business during the pandemic.
And then there was record turnout. Then there was record turnout in the 2022 election with SB 202 in place.
So we're defending that law.
We're defending that. We're defending SB 1 in Texas was the same thing. Florida, we basically won. We went up to the 11th Circuit and have had almost a complete and total victory on all accounts in that. There's one little tiny piece of it that is still under consideration. But that is a resounding victory, I would say. Georgia and Texas, things are going well. Yep. We feel good about our position right now, and we're gonna continue to defend those.
And those laws are in place right now.
They are in place. Exactly. That's a very important distinction. We've got injunction and stays to make sure that they stayed enforced while the litigation was ongoing. We're doing the same thing in Texas, and then those are around defending those laws. A big part of those laws are mail ballot safeguards. It's just a fact. A lot of jurisdictions are moving towards mail balloting.
Okay.
What we can do in those regards is we can make it as safe and secure as fast as possible. One thing that, the acronym that we're using as a department right now is FAST. We want the elections to be fair, accurate, secure, and transparent.
I love that. Fair, accurate, secure, transparent.
That's right. And if you can have all of those aspects in your election, then you're likely pursuing best practices, and it's going to be something that everybody's going to be comfortable with. It's not a whole lot to ask, and it's fairly simple when you put in those terms.
Well, I think you're doing a great job. I know I could spend hours with you. I love this stuff. I love getting in the nitty-gritty on these election lawsuits. It is the bulk of what the RNC is doing right now, I think, with getting the councils on the ground, making sure that we're making sure elections are being administered properly, and also that states are following their own laws. It's
That's
amazing
right.
that we have to sue states to follow their own laws, which is part of it too.
All the time.
We are running out of time.
Okay.
But I do want to just touch on bankyourvote.com.
Yes, absolutely.
Why do you feel like banking our votes and getting our votes in by mail is so important? And explain the importance of doing that and why people should be safe doing that, feel comforted doing that because of what your division's doing at the RNC.
Well, so what we've said is we can't expect you to bank your vote if we're not going to protect your vote.
Correct.
And that is what this entire election integrity department is set up to do, is to protect people's vote. A big part of banking your vote, there's two main ways people can bank their vote, of course, Chairman, as you know. And one is in-person early voting.
Yep.
Which is a wonderful way to bank your vote.
That's how I like to that's how I like to bank my vote. Yes.
I vote.
I go in person and vote early.
I early vote on the first day of early voting in Tennessee every cycle. That's what I do for all elections.
Which means I don't have to spend money chasing your ballot till the end of the election.
Exactly right. And that is, I mean, if you could just talk about it for 2 seconds before I talk about the protect your vote, about why that part of bank your vote, why getting people off the rolls of people to chase, it makes such a difference.
It's just financially, if you're a voter that votes every election, we don't know that. We can't take that for granted. So if there's a 45-day voting window and you're holding your ballot till the 45th day, that means I'm spending money chasing that ballot through text or door knocks or mail or digital to try and get your ballot in. But if you do it day one and you know it's protected because we're going to have poll watchers and poll workers and lawyers there, if you do it day one, that frees up those resources I would otherwise be spending on you to go find a new voter and an independent voter. And that is so critical to our voting bucket. Democrats have embraced this. And this is how they are making huge gains in elections, because we're saying, well, we'll do it all on election day. And there's just not enough resources in the world to chase every voter in every state until election day.
It's a lot of eggs to put in the election day basket.
And something happens on election day, right? There could be a snowstorm, or your child gets sick, or you get sick.
Just saw it in New York.
We just saw it in New York, right? A huge snowstorm.
In Nevada, last cycle. It snowed like a foot in Washoe County, which is Adam Laxalt's home county.
Right. So you got to do it. Okay.
Absolutely. So we're going to protect your vote. We love for folks to go vote early in person where they can.
Yeah.
If you are going to use the mail system, then we want to make sure that is as secure as possible.
Yep.
And the way that we do that is what we've been talking about here this whole time, is putting poll workers where we there in most states there the statutory scheme is set that like the parties are able to nominate poll workers, and then the clerks or the registrars or whoever the election administrator take those, and then they place the people. So we're recruiting poll workers so they will be in there and be part of that process. As I like to say, on the other side of the desk, actually administering that process. That's step one. Step two is having observers in all of these central tabulation areas,
yes,
which we did a really good job of last cycle, and we're going to do an even better job of this cycle because we have all of this dedicated staff and resources, and it is a very central focus of where we're going to recruit poll watchers to, which are these mail processing and tabulation centers where all of these mail ballots are being handled. So we're going to have eyes on that. We're going to have poll watchers. We're going to have attorneys on the ground. We're going to have attorneys in the war room that are dealing with issues as they arise, that are going to be observing all of the handling and processing of these ballots. We're also engaged in litigation to make sure that all parts of the processing of these mail ballots are observable by our poll watchers, which is not the case in some states, but in the states where it's not, we're pursuing litigation to make sure that it is. So we are doing everything we can through the law and through our field efforts to make people comfortable with the fact that they can bank that vote comfortably and know that it's going to be secure and know that it's going to be counted and know that it's the right way to move towards getting us a win in November for the White House, the Senate, and the House.
Well, I appreciate you. Josh is also doing a series for us every month for some of our investors where we're giving updates on our legal efforts. And it's just such a pivotal part of the role of the RNC. And we're uniquely seated to do this because we can get standing and we can intervene in these cases. Thank you for all you're doing. You did so great on your first podcast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
it.
Thanks for having me. You made it easy. So.
You're so good. I just want to say to everybody listening or watching, please go to bankyourvote.com. Make sure to pledge to Bank Your Vote and vote early for this election. We need you. Talk to your neighbors, your friends. Also, go to GOP.com to sign up to be a volunteer. We'll sign you up to be a poll watcher or a poll worker. Call your state party. We need you to be out there to help us during this whole election cycle. We thank you so much for all that you do. And thank you, Josh. And join us next time on Real America. I'm Ronna McDaniel, and this is what Republicans stand for. Join me next time on Real America. Paid for by the Republican National Committee, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. www.gop.com.